Power of Voice.
I'm messing.
Fucking miss that one. If we had cameras, Billy, that would have been on the fucking show.
It would have. The cameras have been rolling, recording nonstop.
I'm going to tell you. Yeah, she
don't
was.
Don't say nothing. Don't do it.
No. We'll move on.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Appalachian Podcast, the number one podcast in the German Baptist community. I'm your host, Billy Riddle. With me is my co-host, the cheeky bastard. I'm a happy 420 state of Appalachia. Good to see you. Thank you up here once again in our, I guess we're in the Big Lick Roofing Studios again because I'm still using his power source over here. Without him, this ain't getting going on. So Dakota's still hanging out here in the room, but we've got our longtime friend, Chocolate Drop Chris Montgomery. He's back on here once again. Chip Slate from Being Libertarian. He's joined the round table. Amos once again. And as per usual, this State of Appalachia show, it's a big deal. So we've got Smokey the Appalachia Sandy back again for the third or fourth time. I think we've done this show. I think it's the third time we've done this one. We've done a couple other shows.
That's the kindest thing anyone's ever said.
That we appreciate you coming in. We did this thing a couple years ago in here, and we ended up sitting in here for God knows how long.
My wife?
Yeah. Right.
Yes, she did.
Sorry about that. We had some technical difficulties jumping right back into it. Either way, so back.
Amos has got big feet, big ears,
big socks.
Big socks. It's all. He's got big feet. So he's so dang tall. He's got to be able to stabilize himself.
You're a poet. You didn't know it. Did you get that?
Oh, are we recording?
Oh, what's in the house?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I've never seen somebody get that excited or assert in my life.
Thank you.
So we.
Let him have it.
That's right.
So, yeah, we're back up here with Smokey. I think the first time we did this a couple years ago, back before Simon was like a full-time gig on here. So he was, you know, we've always done it up here at the cabin or maybe at the woodshop. It's always been in Callaway, and we've always had a really good time with it. And it just the first episode was one of the few that I had to actually go back through and edit a lot.
This fucking guy.
That's our co-host's phone going off.
Paddle feet over here had to
scramble. Well, I was coming up the road, you know, today, driving up here, and I was just kind of noticing off the scenery and, you know, thinking about my youth.
Without your laptop?
Yes.
Charger.
And then my charger. I'm driving up the road. I'm sitting there just reminiscing about 20 years ago when I was younger, riding these roads for different reasons, you know, and really not really taking advantage of it like I should have. I kind of took it for granted. Like, I've been here my entire life. It really never really hit until I had a wife and a kids. I'm like, all right, it means something to be from here. You know, it means, you know, being Appalachian, it's not a birthright. You know, it's something you can become even if you're not from here. It's not something that you can be born into. And, you know, there's people born in the Appalachian region that live in Charleston and Huntington and Parkersburg. You ain't no more Appalachian than somebody from Cleveland, Ohio. You just aren't.
Ohio is not Appalachian. I will stand by that to the day.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I was just listening to a podcast where they were arguing that Ohio could be a part of Appalachian.
They like to claim it, but I won't give them the satisfaction.
You won't give them the
satisfaction. I sit online and I argue with people about this all the time. Just because you're poor doesn't mean you're Appalachian.
Amen.
I think the Appalachian thing is to do with the geological makeup of the mountain chain we're in.
Well, the way
exactly
it's actually part of the Scottish Caledonian mountain
and part of the Algerian mountains or Moroccan.
Well, the way I see it, if you name a road by its number instead of the name, or go down there and take a right then take another left or another right, then you're not Appalachian. Mm-hmm. When we go to Ohio to visit family, they're like, yeah, you go down 817, then you take a ride on 437, and I'm like, that doesn't tell me anything. I need a road.
Now I did it slightly. It was slightly different in the UK when I was growing up, and it took me playing rugby across the whole of the south of England to figure out the whole road atlases of redundant, because in England you've got pubs. So when you get to the Prince of Wales, you turn left.
Right? That's smart.
2 miles. When you get to the Queen's Head, you turn right.
Mm-hmm.
You go over crossroads, you know, the Abinger Hatch, and it goes on from there. So all of my road instructions are down to when you get to this pub, that's where you need to make a critical turn. And I think that's a great way of of knowing, yeah. You know, your area. Oh, yeah, you've just got the whole the King's Arms at the Holborn St. Mary. And once you're there, you're good for number one, stopping out of beer.
Absolutely.
At least one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then move around to the Volunteer and then across into the Avenger Hat. And you can kind of thread your way home over Ranmore and your Ranmore Arms. And when you get to the crossroads, you make a right by the whatever it made. Anyway, I digress. But that's a great way of.
I'll run 55 till you get to that curve that makes you slam your brakes. That's where you need to hang your right at.
But anyway, I was driving up road just thinking about how much I took it for granted. Now that I have kids, it's something worth preserving. And I think it's cool being up here. I want to kind of start making this a yearly event where we come up here. We do the State of Appalachia thing. And it gets a little bit bigger and bigger. We have different kind of guests come in, but we always bring Smokey back. We always have Chip here. You know, different people coming in and out because it's just it's always such a good time. But, you know, for y'all two specifically, you know, we'll – I know y'all both mentioned it before, kind of made sense family-wise and things of that nature, but had to have been something else about this region that drew y'all in here. Y'all were both honorary, obviously. So, you know, what was it? What was it that really brought you in here? I know it made sense, but still, sometimes there's a lot of things that can make sense. You still chose.
So what brought me here or how I ended up here, I've got no idea. Quite frankly, we knew we were going to come back to the States. Heather's folks had moved to the lake. We'd had a couple of visits up and back and forth around the lake. And we had a very good friend of ours, Carol Leggett, was looking for properties for us. And I remember a conversation I had with her at the, I was calling her from the island as well. So I'm calling her up. I said, well, we've seen some land and property. She goes, where are you calling from? I said, well, I'm calling from Turks and Caicos. And she goes, and you want to move here? I said, yeah, we're looking for property. And she goes, you want to fucking what? What is wrong with you? So anyway, Heather's folks are at the lake. We've made our visits. We've finally got contact with just Carol Leggett was an absolute godsend. And she came up, showed us the property, and we ended up here. And people have always had the question, you moved from the Caribbean to the foothills of the Blue Ridge. What were you thinking?
Well, I've gotten to know you a little bit, and I think maybe some of it's more of like a Beauty and the Beast situation.
Very much so.
you just didn't want Heather being the beauty, having to show the beast off all the time. So around here, you know, we're kind of backwards. So.
That's an interesting theory, Chris. I like the way you think. But having been asked this question so many times, it's just, number one, I've got the bloody accent that gets me in so much trouble. And everyone says, well, you know, where did you live? I said, well, we lived in the Caribbean. And that question comes out. So how on earth, why did you move here? And I figured it out. Calloway found me. And I'm very cool with that.
It's a very eloquent way to put it.
Well, I don't have any other answer. Is the facts of the matter. Over the years where I've been asked this question countless times, why did you move from the Caribbean here? Well,
I understand it. I'd much rather be here than
absolutely. And funnily enough, even though we had a wonderful life in the Caribbean, it was glorious. But I've never actually looked back. And that tells me I made the right decision. So, you know, I never saw myself as an old man in the Caribbean. I that was part of the moving process, is that I never saw longevity on the island for a number of different reasons. So, you know, it was, yeah, we found our slice of heaven here, and it really is. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Montana was where I always wanted to go.
Well, I thought about that. You know, the Wyoming, Montana, the Utah, the Big Sky country, that crossed my mind in every sense. But that was west of the Mississippi,
yeah.
Right? So you've got some issues being west of the Mississippi. And with Carol Leggett, I said to her, you know, she goes, oh, would you want to be by the lake? Well, I've lived by the ocean for, you know, 50% of my life and been on the ocean even more. So I said to her, I don't want, and this now becomes current, because it's going to be a current topic that we're going to have a massive fight over, is about zoning. And I said, I don't want to be anywhere near zoning Nazis. If you present me with an HOA, you're fired. And this is what we're seeing now with the Franklin County Board of Supervisors wanting to zone the whole county. I do not want Franklin County Board of Supervisors be in my HOA. And that is how I'm going to stand. I'm going to stand very firm on it. I won't budge. I'm going to make sure there's a campaign put together where the Board of Supervisors gets to hear very loudly and very clearly that we do not want your zoning Nazis and your control implements used against us on our land, and you can kiss my ass. So that battle is coming, and they've got the arrogance to think that they can push it through without a referendum or without town halls, because they are, you know, the intellectual superior force that they think they are when they're not. They're just the same guys sat around this table. And they're going to flex that power, which really is a control upon us for further taxation and theft. And that's what it's going to come down to. And if we don't stand up against countywide zoning, you know, I don't know where we're going to go if that happens. So I'm going to stand firm. I'm going to say to the county, you better get behind this one.
Well, the other thing is, when you talk to people that's moved to this county and you ask them what's their reasoning for coming, well, it's lower taxes. When they're away from the zoned areas, you can kind of do what you want to within a certain amount of, you know, reasoning. So why would you want to continue to choke that down and drive those people who are looking to come here and make a life here, turn them away from that? But.
Well, the low taxes is one thing, and they've, even with all the machinations of these property tax assessments and how they're going to apply a new rate, and then they've come down from that rate. There's a game afoot. Okay, so let's just push that another step further in that wasn't the battle we need to fight. That was preordained. You know, the minor tax increase that we're going to see through their new tax rate was always going to be a big battle that everyone was up in arms against. But to me, that wasn't the thing that rattled my cage. What rattled my cage was the wanting to zone and have control and have these planning Nazis, zoning Nazis. You've got to have a fucking permit to do this, a fucking permit to do that. You can shove your permit system up your ass, and I've seen it corrupt this county within the zoned areas. Exactly. And I do not want zoning Nazis and the people that, quite frankly, have made some horrendous financial decisions for this county are then looking to take more control and impose more restrictions and enforcement. And we just don't. What, number one, we don't need it. Number one, we definitely don't want it. So there's no polite way of saying it, but fuck off.
In a vein, it's before we kind of get down that road, I want to ask you, as somebody coming from another country, to what extent did the cost of living in this area factor into you moving here?
It actually that you know is a tough, because I actually didn't consider it, and the reason I didn't consider it at the time, I was earning obscene offshore income, and I was in a very fortunate position at the time, not really to have any concerns with my bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
Those circumstances have changed recently over the last 3 years, but you know, that it is what it is. So that didn't actually factor in.
So
but now that I'm here and knowing the tax rate is so low, is that through the county being fiscally responsible? Possibly. You know, we're a rural county, so you can't jack up because you don't have the revenue to support that. So, you know, when you get into Roanoke City, they've got a massive revenue base to generate income from, which is another form of theft, but we know this already. But that in a rural area, that is not the case. You know, it's a very complicated argument. So the tax rate wasn't even on my radar at the time. But now that I'm living here and receiving the benefit of that low tax rate, which is still theft, I'm okay with it. But it does not need to be exponentially open-ended where we allow them an open door, which is what this tax assessment has done, is allowed the bean counters an open-ended window of opportunity to always increase every year their tax rate. And when you have an assessment that is extortionately more than it should be, it gives you that opportunity to start with a lower rate, because we know that assessment will never come down. And also it gives you the opportunity to make those annual increases constant. So you're now into the wonderful thing of government now being able to control the monthly bills that we're looking to reduce. And when you get into monthlies, you know you're done.
All right, we're
is from the preachers, and I pretty well knew that somebody had done read me out on the radio, so I'd get it out so I could honestly look them in the eyes and say,
all right, we're back. We're back.
Just a minor glitch.
Yeah, we're having some issues here. There's a good way to help us fix these issues.
Now we're back on stereo.
It fixed it all.
Really?
It's this unit here. Oh, my okay, Lord. We got it figured.
Okay, perfect. Well, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/getontap and help us figure out. We can get ourselves a nice little producer in here and get this stuff right. It's helping us out tremendously. If everybody does subscribe, we give you subscriber-only shows a lot of times. We get a little bit more spicy with it. So you can also go to our Venmo or Cash App and do @getontap for a one time. But I always tell everybody, go to Patreon page, because it's like a community. You're kind of build, you know, people bouncing, sending each other, helping each other's businesses and stuff, helping each other's online businesses grow, things of that nature. Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how we operate it. And so your little contributions here and there help. And if you go to Patreon, though, you're getting a product. You know, the one-time donation's nice. We appreciate y'all. But if you go over there, you can actually get something and chat with us and go in there and talk. And it's only a dime a day. Even Amos can afford it. So go check us out there and then, you know, talk about building a community and stuff. And, you know, we got to be good friends with Smokey here over the years. Now we had the podcast up there in September on his property and had a really good time with that and met some other people. And it's good to see out there that, like, there's this, I don't know, there's this pride people are starting to take in Appalachia. I'm starting to see again, like, people are starting to, and maybe it's because a lot of people here can see the writing on the wall. It's like, you know what?
Because they think we're cool people.
Well, that too.
Righteous?
Not so much. I mean,
when it suits us.
Think about it. Mountain people are good people.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more.
But I mean, we I don't know. Either way, I see a lot between the social media pages and whatnot, a lot of people wanting to get into the homestead and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad Amos is in here right now, because we'll get to some of the spicy stuff in a little bit. Like, because we started doing this a couple years ago, we were getting ready to go to war at Ukraine, or kind of teetering, we're still there. I kind of talk about how this affects our region and everything, but
this is one of the first podcasts I did was with Brandon.
Yeah.
Because you explained it to me and I was like, that's the dumbest shit I've ever fucking heard. After I heard Brandon out, I was like, you know what?
We've had conversations in the interim and stuff, and some of that stuff I wanted to get into, things that you've asked, like, well, and these are things a lot of people ask, well, how does it look logistically? And the first thing I tell them is, you're looking at it through the lens of, okay, this is what we are right now. We're chopping this part of the region off and we're continuing on as follows. That's definitely not how it's going to be. You know, the South's going to break off. Maybe the coast breaks. And this is all hypothetical.
Hopefully
here,
California.
But, you know, why I don't think the state of Appalachia makes sense. So, you know, passage. Well, now we're going to start making deals with these other places, just like states and stuff. The only thing it does is it gives us more of our own autonomy and more of our votes coming out of people that actually live in these mountains and hollers. That's the only difference it would be.
Well, there's already the argument of you have the Texas National Movement that's working on trying to make Texas an independent republic once again. And everyone always says, well, Texas isn't going to survive on their own.
Shit.
There's a gentleman on Twitter. His handle is @state_secession. He pretty much lives, eats, and breathes state secession, talking about national divorce on a everything from a individual level up to a macroeconomics level. This man's he's kind of like an idiot savant to it. He knows what he's talking about, but he also makes up the great point of like, just because Texas is leaving doesn't mean that it's going to be 49 states versus Texas, because if Texas leaves, is Louisiana going to sit there and be like, well, hey, why shouldn't we leave as well? Yeah. You know, Oklahoma, Virginia, for example, or at least the western part of Virginia, the state of Appalachia, so to speak.
Well, all you've got to do is look at the oil and gas income out of the Gulf.
Yeah.
And for that to happen would be a thing for the federal government to be extremely concerned about. Mm-hmm. And they will not allow that to happen on the basis of the domino effect of the Gulf Coast and oil and gas revenue. So it puts the power back into the state, which really is a good thing for our personal liberties.
Yeah.
And I don't view that, you know, really as a bad thing for the U.S. either.
But, you know, anytime a state tries to take care of the state, Texas, good example, they're fought every tooth and nail by the federal government, which is taxpayers' money, fighting taxpayers' money. You know, I feel like the states should have all the rights. The federal government, now, the succeeding thing, look, it is what it is. You're in the United States. Succeeding ain't an option. States' rights is. And adding states, like, you know, where regions are represented.
We're not necessarily saying a secession either. How about a redrawing? I mean, why do we sit here and talk about how...
Are you talking about gerrymandering?
I'm just saying, why does it make sense?
Well, they did it in the Civil War. Where did Oklahoma come from?
Well, West Virginia. They've been doing it throughout history. Where did the Mason-Dixon line come from? They did it in the 1940s. Right now, we're tinkering on World War III because of redrawing of, you know, borders in the Middle East. It made absolutely no sense. You know, why should, you know, all the Shiite should probably have their own spot, all the Kurds, you know.
Let's bring it to an even more local level. Do the people of Northern Virginia or Richmond or Virginia Beach represent anyone sitting in this room right now?
Absolutely not, but unfortunately, their influence is...
Well, most of them are federal government workers.
I don't think that anything north of the Rappahannock is Virginia anymore. That's my personal opinion on how Virginia looks, at least.
I'm not offended by that either.
I don't think the people that are
they don't represent us in any way, shape, or form, and therein lies a huge problem when it comes to one man, one vote, and equal representation. So, when you look at it constitutionally, there's a problem,
right?
But they're just not choosing to solve the constitutional problem. So, that is in fact an even bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
When that's not a It's not a rabbit hole.
I think it's a third of our state delegates come out of Fairfax and Alexandria and that little pocket, you know, Prince George County, I think, or no.
Yep.
Prince William County.
And most of them are
one of the Prince counties. Implants.
Most of them moved in here.
Exactly. Or, you know, you have the wonderful CIA officer, Abigail Spanberger, who's one of their representatives. Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully the CIA does what they do to politicians to her.
Yeah, I mean, you got to imagine they've green. I mean, you know, that's sad part of it.
Well, let's say we do. When's our elections next year?
It's coming. November is a big one.
Not for governor.
No,
because
we're all cycling.
We got two more years for our governor, but
yeah, you have an actual former CIA agent running for governor.
She ran against former Green Beret Nick Freitas in the 2021 election or 2020 election, and he was winning by 6,000 votes. We all went to sleep, and then at 3 o'clock in the morning, she gained 5,000 votes over him because they found a flash drive that had only votes for her. They put her just above the threshold for a recount.
Seems like it might
immediately
be a reoccurring thing.
Yeah. Well, I think
who's the SEAL team dude that's having a battle against Bob Good?
Oh, I know who you're talking. I don't know the gentleman's name.
No. He's but he's a former SEAL team member. And he's going to run against Bob Good.
So you say SEAL team member and politician. All I think of is eye patches McCain, to be honest.
Yeah. I think that's what Billy's mind is.
I'm trying to think of the gentleman's name, but I know you're talking.
John McGuire.
Yes.
I mean, eye patch McCain is the absolute worst. I mean, I had a lot of hope for him. I was like, all right, dude lost his freaking eye overseas. He should know this is a BS war. And he gets in here. Okay. And I mean, it's like John McCain dies and his soul was just immediately strewn right into Dan Crenshaw.
Ah, a fresh body, a fresh meat suit.
Yeah. I mean, we could really talk about that. If we had Stuart up here, we could really go into his, you know.
I'm sure he connects all the dots.
Oh, that kind of stuff.
But, you know, Bob Good, I think, has been very good for the state, the county. I also, having met the guy a number of times, and he's been pretty solid in his libertarianism, even though he's a solid Republican and stands on a Republican ticket. He has very libertarian principles.
Well, he's not even our congressman anymore.
Well, no, not here.
Yeah, he was. Now it's like at Griffith or Griffin guy from
Mark Griffith.
But even so, Bob Good has been.
Yeah, but I think he's Puerto Roanoke too.
I think Bob Good has been very good for Southern Virginia, even though he's a GOP candidate. He's bucked the trend on the side of libertarianism. And that to me, you know, you've got to tip your hat and say, yeah, power to you. I appreciate you standing up. And
well, every politician should buck the trend on everything.
And so that's unfortunately, won't. But where we are locally as well.
Question everything.
Yeah.
Well, everything's becoming, you know, societal now. I mean, you got, you know, the Trump supporter. That's who's opposing Good now as a vocal Trump supporting opponent. So he's like, I'm going to carry Trump's, you know.
And I don't think that's necessarily the ticket of a candidate that you want to support.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I like Good's voting record. He votes
support it when it makes sense.
He votes with Massey quite a bit.
Support it.
He's got a really good vote.
I would give my left nut to have Mr. Massey as our representative.
Amen. Amen to that.
He is a wonderful human being.
I'd love to get him to sit down on a show with Amos and let an MIT grad former and a high school dropout former go toe to toe and just.
And we're talking about Thomas Massey from Kentucky. Mm-hmm. He's a representative who's just, he was an electrical engineer at MIT. So his intelligence is off the charts, and he's basically the one remaining Liberty candidate that's out there.
Have you seen his Klux capacitor? His chicken tractor that he built.
Klux,
is that his Tesla? His Tesla battery?
It's attached to his winch on his chicken tractor to pull his chicken tractor forward like a quarter inch every day.
It's amazing.
Every hour or so to give his chickens fresh grass and stuff.
Whilst they fertilize with very nitrogen rich litter.
You college don't teach that.
Oh no.
No. He's a very smart man who went to a higher institution of learning for genuine smart people.
He's a gift.
I have an uncle that.
Born in Appalachia too.
We never made it through high school. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
right. And his boys, Daniel and Isaac's dad, they never made it through high school. Mm-hmm. He is completely off grid. He has built a biodiesel generator. He's got a building that's got like 400 battery bank in it, a solar system, and the solar system can't keep up with the house and stuff, then the biodiesel generator will kick in and recharge it. And you can't teach that. And the only people that can teach that is the people that
free thinking
hand on. Yes.
Yep.
The kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, I have my little black book of quotes here I always write down. When you're saying, you know, about state secession or, you know, states becoming their own regions and stuff, and how politicians should kind of support us, but many of them don't. Something to remember is that it's impossible to debate something with people if their own preconceptions make that something impossible. How many times do you hear people say, you can't make it 51 states, you can't leave the union, it's forever. You know, it's not people you even have to spend your time having a conversation with.
Because it's impossible for them to be able to think. I mean, you know, if you don't have the ability to think, do have the ability to believe what somebody else tells you, you don't, you know, you got to keep an open mind on everything.
It's the best way I can always frame a national divorce, so to speak, is in the frame of a national divorce. If you're in a very unhappy relationship, or especially where one of, you know, the members of that relationship is abusive, tries to beat the shit out of you, threatens you with violence all the time, are you going to stay in that relationship? Or are you going to say, I'm going to go do my own
thing. It depends on if they promised me the best of the best and a new house and a new ride and a new phone. You know, I can probably deal with it for a little longer.
Yeah, but it's a Ryan Holmes home.
Exactly.
Do you really want to live in a Ryan home?
No. But, I mean, the government, that's exactly what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
They make it just good enough to convince people not to get that divorce, not to leave.
I'd agree with that, but I think our message should be, you know, hey, sure, they're providing a roof over your head. Doesn't matter that the walls are literally pouring water in here or, you know, you got two black eyes and, you know.
But if you stepped away from that, you could provide your own roof.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 times better than what you're ever going to get from them.
There's no guarantee that, let's just talk about Texas for a second. There's no guarantee that Texas going its own way will work out for them in the end. In 200 years, Texas could break apart or decide, hey, I want to rejoin what's left of the United States because it's not working for us. But what's the harm in them trying that?
Or in 10 years, they would be Abu Dhabi, Dubai.
They could become one of the, you know, the net
per energy. Absolutely, yeah. I think they would.
I agree with that. You know, I think one of the statistics I read is if they became their own country, they'd become like the sixth largest hydrocarbon net exporting country on the planet. You know, it's like if Southwest Virginia became its own state. You know, we'd have a $1 billion coal industry that we could fire up again. You know, we'd have to deal with federal regulations, obviously, but we could become a net energy exporter with all of our, I'm trying to remember the exact type of coal it is. Starts with a B.
It's only around here.
It's here. Back,
high energy.
Back during the 1900s, it was the only coal that the United States Navy allowed to supply naval ships. Mm-hmm. And we also exported it to, I believe, the Royal Navy for their ships until they went to bunker oil. We have a ridiculous amount of
Red Ensign over there.
Natural gas in our own land here. There's the whole solar farm things that we could, you know, talk about, or at least go to solar shingles like we were talking about earlier, which I'm still fascinated by that. There's wind energy. There's rivers here that we can harness hydropower off of.
The wind energy has an enormous concerns for me with, you know, blade maintenance, turbine
on a big scale,
and motor maintenance. So these massive...
I'm not talking about the ones that they're putting off the coast of, you know, Virginia Beach where, you know, oh, hey, I mean, love looking coming. At the skyline now, or the horizon now and seeing a bunch of, you know, dancing blades in the distance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on a individual scale, just like the, you know, Big Lick and the shingles and stuff, you know, that's where it makes sense to me.
Well, individually, I think, yeah, and that's where the direction should be.
But that's why it's going to be fought every tooth and nail because there's not money for big companies.
Exactly. So why do you think, as a certain gentleman happened to mention, that AEP is now in bed with these solar projects?
The ones they know that don't make sense.
Right. So we've got an enormous conflict of interest with AEP and an industry that gives us the power. And I almost look at it now, and the analogy is shouldn't be lost with anyone. When you used to buy your LPs, your singles, your cassettes, your DVDs, you own the music. Well, now when you do all these Spotify downloads and goodness knows what else, you can enjoy the music, but you don't own it.
Same with Audible.
So is this not right. going to be the case with power and the AEP corporate, you know, monster is looking to keep that ownership away from us that would benefit us the most? Mm-hmm. So, you know, therein lies a massive conflict of interest. And if we don't start hammering these guys and saying, you're not going to play this corporate bullshit to stop us having our freedom and our rights with regards to our existence, I think you're on a really, really dodgy wicket.
But the only way to combat that is the same way that it got here. It's got to start local. The local people have to understand that it's not going to be tolerated. And then it has to go up from there. I mean, you know, at one of the meetings.
Simon, this is a PG show.
I mean, that's how they took, that's how they hijacked it in the beginning, was they started local and hijacked it from there up. And the only way to take it back is start local and take it back.
Right. When we talk about,
but, and I'll, well, so, you know, all this solar stuff, all this alternative, you know, you can go on Amazon, whatever, and buy some cheap ass solar panel made in China for El Cheapo dollars. And, or, you know, you like the GAF shingles, that, all that components made in America. They're, GAF makes everything in America.
The, kind of going off of what you were just saying, though, where it starts local is, and then pivoting to, what Simon just said is, I think that it's up to us to locally make sure that Apple, you know, we take care of ourselves, our neighbors, our friends and family first before we worry about anywhere else in the country, anywhere else on the planet. You know, you can't take care of your neighbor if your house is on fire, so to speak. But, you know, if we got to the point where, you know, you're your own electrical provider, you could get to that point with a, you know, a state of Southwest Virginia, a state of Appalachia, now, where we
isn't that environmentally friendly?
Absolutely,
but it's, all the regulation roadblocks, that's where the problem lies.
Well, and that's why I want to kind of get to Texas. If we talk about Texas breaking away, I mean, we always, there's so many different hypotheticals, and I believe when something like that happens, nobody really knows. See, for me, what would make sense? Okay, if Texas says they're going to go, well, why wouldn't Oklahoma, then Nebraska, then Kansas, Missouri, all the states basically from the Rockies to the Mississippi, why wouldn't they all jump in with Texas and say, all right, we build us a super, basically a super strip here in the middle. We've got access from Canada down to Mexico. We've got port access. We've got river access. We've got all the oil and energy down
XL
here.
Pipeline.
You get oil and energy up north, plus you get everything in the middle that's all your agriculture.
I think there's precedent to that.
And then, I mean, the Rockies could possibly go, you know, move with them, or the Rockies could go be part of the West Coast, you know, cartel. But that leaves us in a great position as well, because people are like, well, how would Appalachia survive? Well, if we're on our state, all of a sudden we decide, well, let's bring in nuclear energy because it's really clean. It's really cheap. Now our people have an opportunity to really thrive.
Let's be honest. Appalachia's took care of this nation from get-go.
Yeah, and we've been kicked in the nuts, I mean, for it for our
coal miner boy was Rocket Man.
Well, Appalachia wouldn't have to. Homer Hickam. You know, they wouldn't have to.
Homer Hickam. Yeah. One of my heroes. Great movie, too.
He's actually the one of the guys I want. He's on my bucket list for this show. I want to get Homer Hickman, and we might have to travel to Huntsville, Alabama to do it. But I think if I reach out to him, we can make it happen because he's just from right up there in West Virginia.
His friend, Roy O'Neill, or whoever, his buddy, that.
I know who you're talking about. I think the name's escaping me.
Homer was marketable, but Roy, it was a great team. They understood this. Let's use our head.
It's everyone talks about artificial intelligence. I've been calling a lot of stuff Appalachian intelligence recently. Like you said, you took a coal miner's son who was like, I want to shoot some rockets up into the sky. And he started off blowing up his fence post, and he scaled up and up. And then he's, you know, was one of the lead designers, I believe, and test engineers for NASA for 40 years.
But sort of part of that backs up to, you know, during World War II, when everybody was crashing Germany, Russia was, you know, all the other countries wanting to go after their weapons.
Oh, you're talking about Operation Paperclip.
America went after their scientists.
How NASA went from Sieg Heil to Sieg Moon.
Right. So, you know, they brought the brains. Mm-hmm. You can have all the weapons.
Yeah.
We'll get the guys who developed the weapons. People,
exactly. Yeah.
Plus, they also, I mean, you know, like it or not, it's a tragic part of history, but a lot of the experiments and things they were allegedly doing at the time.
Some of it's not allegedly.
Well, some of it's not and some of it isn't, but I'm just saying. I don't know everything that happens.
You're triggering both sides of the audience.
I'm trying to, yeah. But I mean, so they took a lot of that information though, and they've used it. You know, I mean, why not? I mean, you wouldn't want to sit there and say, "Well, all these people died." Well, maybe some of those people died, and then somewhere down the line, somebody with a good heart's like.
But that's why we're in reverse right now.
It's a big part of it.
Nobody,
we're definitely moving backwards.
Oh, dude, it's terrible.
Oh, for sure. And let's not talk about abortion or going back to 1860, whatever the hell they're generating now on mainstream media, which is a load of bollocks. Mm-hmm. But we are definitely regressing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And that is a pause for
And
for
I honestly think we concern. Have been for basically that last
couple
20
of decades.
Years.
Couple of decades.
You know, I was thinking about this, and I think it is the internet. And I don't necessarily think it's social media, but it's just chat rooms, message boards in general. Because here's what happened. Back before the internet, back before smartphones connected everybody, typically the strongest survived. The strongest kids in the school were playing the sports, and the weaker ones would kind of get pushed in lockers. Some of them would wear that chip on their shoulder. They'd go be a badass Marine or something. They'd make something of themselves. The rest of them would dwindle away, and they would take it as defeat, and they would go on to nothing. Well, what the internet has done has now given all these people that are the people that got shoved into lockers and picked on and never made anything of themselves, it all gives them an ability to come together. Well, now they come together in this home. Now we feel needed. Now we feel necessary. Well, how can we feel more and more necessary? Well, maybe we'll start changing our hair or coloring our hair. Now maybe we'll start cutting our boobs off and chopping our wieners off. I mean, everything gets to be a competition of what more and more we can do to outdo each other. If we just went back to the natural order of things, we would be a better off society where, you know, Darwinism kind of took the reins. It's not that we have too many people on this planet. We have too many inefficient people on this planet. We have way too many people. If everything shut down tomorrow, half the world is done because they are reliant on somebody else for everything. Probably more than half.
Oh, God, I bet 3/4.
We're okay up here. That's what we keep trying to tell everybody. Hey, look, move up here. Be self-sufficient. Go buy you some goats.
Not everybody, let's be honest. There's a lot of people we don't want.
Shingles, oh, we're going to need him to raid a warehouse somewhere.
Absolutely.
If you live in the city, do not come here. It's awful.
Please. No. Go to the Midlands. I was talking earlier about that. But going back to what I was saying with Texas, you know, maybe all those states come together and form an alliance. I don't think it's going to be as easy as maybe it's not regional. Maybe it's more economics. There's going to be a lot of different ways, but for us, okay, well, passage. You need passage through those mountains. Appalachian Mountains reaches all the way up to the Great Lakes, so we've got that. Then it reaches all the way down, you know, to northern Alabama, which, hey, we send y'all some of our coal, we send you this, you give us, or maybe cheaper tolls to come through here, passage, we use your ports. Now we got ports in the south, we got ports in Texas. I think ultimately, this is why I think they squash it so much, because if any type of secession or rechanging or redistricting ever occurred, I think every single state official out there with any sense is going to come together and map around the blue cesspool cities everywhere, and they're going to leave them to be done for. Can you imagine? Why wouldn't it go that way? You
don't kind of like that now.
You don't need them anymore. You don't need New York City. And by the way, if you completely just strike them out, they'll probably be done for in 2 years tops anyway, then you go back in and take it back over.
Speaking of going around the maps on the election stuff, did y'all look at the our last election map for our area, the little blue dot that's normally Roanoke? Notice that how it was only around Hollins University that was blue and the rest of Roanoke was dark red. I thought that was...
Isn't that like Virginia Tech and Montgomery County?
Oh, my Lord. Don't even start with the Blacksburg stuff.
Yeah.
They knew that election before they even called the election.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. These people are not smart. I mean, they have degrees. And I guess at memorizing things but there's so many doctors anymore. There's not a good doctor like Dr. Barrett who would go and
or
give
Dr. Boone.
She would go, she'd milk a cows, then she'd go deliver a baby, then she'd see some patients who'd do surgery at night and go back home and milk. Nowadays it's like, oh, you got a nosebleed? Well, I'm just a doc on call right here. I'm gonna send you to a specialist in Roanoke.
Here's a pill.
Yeah,
there'd be enough snow on the ground, and she'd have a patient. I know this, that an emergency patient. Her husband would drive her in the tractor to town to Rocky Mount from Callaway to Rocky Mount to do a surgery or something on a patient.
That's how it should be, man. Like I was talking about this with a couple of my friends recently.
But Big Pharma tossed her.
The idea, it's the big box mart. Jib Jab made a really funny video years ago called Big Box Mart. It's one of those internet things you might not understand. Right. But I was talking to my friends and said, honestly, I'd love to see the death of the big box mart. Like, sure, I go to Food Lion and get decent discounts, or I call it Shitty Kitty, and get discounts there. But I'd like to see that disappear. We have Slaughters over in Floyd. I try to use them as often as I can.
Get regulation out of the way.
That's the biggest problem. That's the biggest. But,
that's what created the big box store.
Like you've talked about, something with bringing back like an abattoir, a butcher shop, you know, a local bakery, a dry goods store. I'd like to see small shops, especially where I live up in Floyd. You know, we've got an old farm equipment store that was turned into a hardwood store. This guy makes really nice hardwood products, sells $600 stools. No one in Floyd County is buying this product. It's all the people that stop in off the Blue Ridge. But at the end of the day, why do I have to go to Pulaski to go to Rural King or Tractor Supply Company in Christiansburg when I used to have a farm supply store 10 minutes down the road from my house?
We're seeing this come back slowly. It's funny, Philip Bain has just turned up, and he's you know, the developer behind the Morris Hotel, Pekin Angle, and all sorts of business incubators and so forth, and rejuvenating that life within Old Town Rocky Mount. We're seeing a lot of businesses develop within Rocky Mount, and they're not, none of them are big box store. Angle Hardware has survived. You know, and how they've done it, I do not know. It's brilliant. I rejoice in the fact that they are still there, even though Lowe's is literally half a mile, three quarters of a mile down the road.
That's impressive.
And
oh, dude, they're awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
I wish we had that.
The rejuvenating of downtown.
It's hard to survive
with a brewery, the Burger Company, Rocky Mount Smokehouse. Also known as
Appalachian Barbecue, Appalachian Podcast Barbecue.
It was the Appalachian Podcast Barbecue.
That was my vote. I said, why not?
Did you vote it for real?
Well, it was a write-in.
So there is a lot going on in Rocky Mount that I think we all as a community need to embrace.
I think it's not just Rocky Mountain, Franklin County. I think it's all of America needs to embrace that, you know.
And I think it's coming. We're on the cusp of, you know, that it's almost a retail revolution because,
yeah.
And I don't know how it's going to survive the internet age, but somehow it has to.
Well, I know how self checkouts are surviving.
They're not doing very well.
Have to see my receipt.
But you know, we were talking a little bit earlier. We were talking a little bit earlier about Texas or getting away from that union that everyone just can't quite fathom. It's a complex.
Well, they joined to begin with.
Well, it's a complex discussion. But and then it comes back and you shrink it down and it's a control element. So the control element of the federal government has overreached itself. Mm-hmm. So now we're looking to come back to state governance. Mm-hmm. Which is where it should always have been in the first place. So the carrot and stick has been a very, very great weapon for federalism. But if we take that step a little bit further, so instead of giving control up, we should be retaking control. Now, when you retake control, you do a number of things, and it allows you to get away from corporatism. Mm-hmm. It allows you to have your individual rights respected. So when we're you go down that a step further to you and I in the street, we can go to Dakota and we can actually get control of our power and not be corporately tied to AEP. That may take some distancing, but it gives you control back. And that's what we should all be driving for, is being able to control our lives with our individual freedoms and God-given rights. And that was Amos cracking it. It had to happen at least once. So, you know, anything where we're taking control back, I embrace wholeheartedly.
But anything
that you
take control back of is less money for the federal government.
Well, but it's also about self-responsibility at that point as well, because that's the tricky one. So when you take back control, you take back responsibility. That's for some people is a burden too much.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's the the people that, you know, they check their little box and they say, well, if someone will take care of it, someone will take care of it. I love this apartment complex I'm living in. Someone comes and takes care of the garbage.
Give me the
someone
free shit.
Someone takes care of the lawn for me.
Give me the free shit.
I just drop a check off. I don't have to deal with anything. Oh, the wall is leaking. I call someone about that.
Taxpayers' money shouldn't build the condos that is run by the government.
You don't want the government to run. You don't want the government to run damn thing.
But that goes all the way back to local. Why is the local government going out and spending 10 times more money for two farms than it should to turn to why not work with a private developer? You know, why not, if you're on a board, say, hey, man, this businessman, Dakota, man, he knows how to run a business. Mm-hmm. Why, let's go to him and say, hey, we feel like we're in need of this. We'll work this deal out. We'll kind of front you. We'll give you tax breaks. But why not work with the local people? They're not developers. They've never, most of them never run a business.
Well, it only makes sense that there's probably some money getting skimmed off the top or off the bottom at some point in time when you're overpaying for things.
Or if you're giving a golf course a tax break like a cow pasture, there's probably something to be had somewhere along the line.
That's the bureaucracy. I mean, it's that standard bureaucracy.
But, you know, if I can go to Dakota and say, man, I need a roof. Hey, in return, I'll give you a beef. I'll give you this, this, and this. Nobody else makes money.
Right.
I get what I want. He gets what he wants. But no.
Yeah, because the government wasn't there in the middle of that transaction, raising those cows, and the government surely never carried any shingles up on your roof for you.
I want to see the government employer that does that. That'd be I can say this as a government employee. Don't blame us. We didn't do anything. We're lazy.
Yeah. Well, there's never been any accountability with government. The fact that the Pentagon still has unaccounted trillions from an audit. They haven't passed one audit ever. Okay, so when we're talking about accountability, that's the example I'm going to use, and I will never stop using.
Now, what happens if I failed every audit I ever went through?
Oh, you'd be in jail.
And if I didn't go to jail, they would come with weapons to my house and drag me out or kill me trying.
Or if you tried to have a transaction between you and just another person, like the Silk Road,
my Lord, they're going to roll
you over. But that's exactly what, you know, otherwise you'd be doing.
Well, I kind of want to talk about something that's not really controversial for a second while we've got all y'all here in the room.
I don't believe it.
Huh?
I don't believe it.
Controversial? Well, I want to talk about Israel and Palestine.
Oh, yeah. I've got a good one. I've got a good one here.
Because it, for me personally, I don't know how anybody else feels. Like, I'm just kind of over here. Like, I don't really care either way. I see kind of both sides of it, and all I really want is for our tax dollars not to be funding it. But it seems like everywhere you turn now, I mean, for the love of God, I can sit here and do nothing and just...
There's a photo.
And I'm getting called this or this by everybody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, people I thought were on my side, people I knew. It's just, it's mind-boggling to watch people go back over.
There's a photo of Hezbollah or Hamas or Hamas, whatever you want to call them. Their rockets firing into Israel. The Iron Dome rockets are coming up, and both of them say, my tax dollars, somehow also my tax dollars. And that's a very good thing.
That video, I think... Whether that's
an older photo.
That was an older meme. The video that has come out recently, and this is purely my theory. Run with me on this just for a touch. The video that came out with the Iranian drone and missile attack on Israel last weekend was absolutely fictitious.
Was fictitious.
Fictitious. It was horseshit. That was not a real video of the Iron Dome in operation.
Well, whether it was or not, let's talk about this. What happened?
But hang on, let me finish my theory here because it's a good one. And it goes into how close are we to the brink of involvement in what could well be the brink of World War III. So if you consider Iran attacks Israel with drones and ballistic missiles, mm-hmm. right? So they and the drones took 4 or 5 hours, 4 hours or whatever to get there. Mm-hmm. So they were a slow moving target. Good luck with that. They also timed the attack that when the drones reach their target, the same ballistic missiles would be involved simultaneously with the impacts. Now, the mainstream media are claiming that 99% of those projectiles were intercepted.
So every
bullshit. So, and they accompany it with that piece of horseshit video that is made up AI shit. I know reasonably well that a lot more of the ballistic missiles got through. Mm-hmm. Right. So the Iron Dome may have taken out the drones, a lot more of the ballistic missiles got through.
But I thought our aircraft, our warships shot down a bunch of them.
No.
That's what Biden said.
Was that after he talked to his people being eaten by cannibals?
I've already dismissed it.
And Simon wants to talk about accountability.
Well, let's take it a step further. So that attack happened last weekend, and that was, now we've got Israel firing back on them, right? And that was very much against our commander-in-chief's Best wishes. And he made that well known with Netanyahu. Don't fire back. Everything's okay. It'll be great.
Did he put it that eloquently? Well,
if the boot was on the other foot and someone had lobbed 300 missiles at us, do you think that we would hold back on the trigger?
I think we would. Under our commander in chief.
Well, that would be disturbing.
Why?
Okay, but hang on. I haven't finished my theory. Let me finish my theory here. So what's happened is that Biden has swung round and said, don't attack. Netanyahu swung round and pretty much gave him the middle finger, launched his counterattack. But what disturbs me most is, but now we're all leaving. Everything's good. Everything's hunky-dory. We're saving face in a very oriental way, which is not how the Arab nations work, I may hasten to add. So applying, this is cultural appropriation at its finest. They've now come into saying that Israel and Iran have this oriental approach to their cultural issues because they're saving face. I call horseshit on that whole argument. But what has happened with Iran launching their attack and the way they did it, and the success rate they did have, they now know the response from the Iron Dome and Israeli defense. So that
maybe
was,
they do.
Oh, absolutely. Do not think the think Iranian they military.
They just shot a bunch of. I mean, why wouldn't they? I mean,
well, I'm saying like I'm not.
Well, I'm what I'm saying here is
do they
Iran,
have the ability to know how many got shot down, like the damage they've
absolutely.
Really done? Because, I mean, we all seen Baghdad Bob, for Christ's sake.
But the ones that actually shot them off would.
But Iran has now seen the defensive posture of Israel.
Yes, but taking it one
more
step.
In what was a fake, preemptive, verbalized attack that they knew was coming. So now Iran is actually sitting back going, this is their defense posture. This is how we can beat it. Mm-hmm.
How much cash did we ship them?
Were they certain, though?
Billions.
Was there a visible Iranian flag, like billion? How there wasn't a visible American flag on the USS Liberty when our greatest ally ever attacked us then?
Yeah, by submarine in there. Yeah.
And left tons of...
But I'm just saying, all is not what it seems. And this shit show is far from over.
Well, my thing is, when did it,
I think it's all a distraction.
Well, when did it get to the point to where countries started calling each other up and said, hey, buddy, I'm just going to fire some rockets into your country. Go ahead and move your troops from this area. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're doing that, you're just wasting taxpayer dollars firing rockets to not do anything at all, but land in the desert.
Yeah.
Like, and they'll say the one when Trump was in office. Remember when he got al-Baghdadi or whatever his name, or whoever, the Iranian general. Yeah. They ended up, like, bombing al-Assad Air Base. Now, they'll sit there and say, like 110 were injured, but that's because 110 of them went and like concussion protocol. And if you get a concussion, it's now a Purple Heart, which is ridiculously stupid. Unless you were
a
right
Purple Heart.
Yes, yeah. If you're right beside an IED. Exactly. If you're right beside an IED, I think you should probably
get one technically for firing a 50? Because I hear that you get a TBI from firing a 50.
It's very possible. So what I'm saying is this is so orchestrated.
You can do as the spotter.
People are calling ahead of time and saying, okay, we're going to be firing here. We're going to be firing there. Like, Japan didn't call Pearl Harbor and say, hey, buddies, we're on the way. We're going to be there in 2 hours. Get your defense systems ready.
I don't think we hauled it in Nagasaki.
Is this not an issue? And actually, I've just thought about that. Is this not an issue of and a danger of running proxy wars?
Well, that's what all this is.
The war is meant to be continuous.
Right. So the danger of proxy wars is exactly where we're at now. Mm-hmm. And we're being called out. We're going to be called out.
Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of part one of our State of Appalachia episode. Just want to give a big shout out to Smokey the Appalachian Stanny and thank him for coming down here. You can catch him on Instagram, X, and I believe Facebook as well under Smokey the Appalachian Stanny or at Appalachian Stanny, I think, on X, and State of Appalachia on Instagram. Also, Chip Slate, Being Libertarian. You can find them on all three major platforms. Simon for having us up here today. Amos, Chris Montgomery for joining us. Dakota, Weddle, Big Lick Roofing. Big shout out to him as well for sticking around and having a good time. So if you want to catch the show in its entirety, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/getontap. It's only $3 a month minimum. You can always give more, but cup of coffee,
You can support us, support local, get the show in its entirety, and we'll do this. We're starting to get to the point to where we're getting more and more content. So just please be patient with us. For those that do subscribe, we sincerely appreciate it. And we appreciate everybody else who wants to come over and check us out. So once again, that's patreon.com/getontap. And for $3 a month, become a subscriber. We got some really cool subscriber stuff coming up this summer as well. We're going to have you out at. So thank everybody again, and tune in next week for the rest of the show.
One day I opened up an old and dusty drawer. A little rusty piece of steel fell out on the floor. As I went to pick it up, my memory came back strong. It was Daddy's pocket knife he carried for so long. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wandered back to that hard-working man. An old piece of steel and worn-out cattle bone, Daddy's pocket knife has finally made it home. Bought it years ago at the Angle Hardware store. Come home from work every day, his fingers cracking sore. Come here, my son, and sit up on my knee. Let me tell you a little tale about the way things used to be. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wander back to that hard-working man. An old piece of steel and worn-out cattle bone, Daddy's pocket knife has finally made it home. From my on that dreadful day, I held that blade in my hand, no words left to say. His time on earth was near, he placed it in that drawer, knowing one day his son will find it and carry it once more. As I held that rusty piece of steel there in my hand, my thoughts wander back to that